I'm excited to bring you another NCAA leader. And today, joining us on the podcast, is the head football coach at Northwest Missouri State, Rich Wright. Coach, it's great to have you here on the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Coach, you guys obviously have been doing an outstanding job there at Northwest Missouri State for a number of years, and you've been able to continue that in taking over here in your first year as head coach. You're also the defensive coordinator, and you guys led in some major categories this year in total defense, scoring defense, third down percentage. And then on special teams, you guys were number one in punt blocks and number two in block kicks. So you guys certainly have a winning formula there. We're going to talk about some of those X's and O's, but we're going to get into some of the background and as you as a coach and, you know, the way you've made it up through the ranks. We'll talk about some of those things too. So, Coach, share with our audience first just a little bit about how you got your start in coaching and really what spurred you on to become a football coach.
You know, basically, I got an opportunity to go to Dana College in Blair, Nebraska, worked there for 2 years. And the guy that was there as the head football coach was a guy by the name of Jim Krieger, and he was friends with a couple guys on staff that had just gotten a job here at Northwest Missouri State. They had been in the same league at Nebraska Wesleyan University. And so I went to a convention in Dallas and met Scott Bostwick and Jim Svoboda and came here in the spring and interviewed, and they hired me. And so I became a graduate assistant here in 1995 and 1996 and really kind of took off from there.
Coach, you know, as you got your start in coaching, I know for a lot of guys, it certainly is a different lifestyle than when you were a player. And for some guys, it's a little bit of a shock to their system to get into, I guess you could call it the grind, and have to do all those things, especially as a GA. For you, what things, you know, made it all worthwhile? What was the lesson, or who was the guy who kind of, you know, it made it click for you and say, yeah, this is what I want to do with my life?
You know, really, I think it was those 2 years at Dana College. And you know, the thing that I try and advise, you know, my young guys with and guys that are interested in potentially being graduate assistants here for us is when we sit down and talk about it, you know, I usually ask the question, can you live without football? Because if you don't answer that question as a no, I can't live without football, I'm not sure that you're really cut out to get into this lifestyle, because it's got to be who you are. Otherwise, it's a heck of a lot easier to go out and earn a living doing something else. And so there's just so much to this and getting yourself established and getting off the ground and struggling for years and not making a lot of money. And it's that burn and it's that passion from within that I think is what drives you. And it's, you know, just wanting, I can remember just wanting to learn, and it didn't matter whether I was outside, you know, marking a field or if I was in a film room, I just wanted to be a sponge.
And that's definitely a huge part of this game, is that learning. And it's in so many aspects. It's not just the X's and O's. It's learning how to deal with people. It's learning how to teach. It's learning how to manage time, all those things. So as you look back on your development, what were some of those key lessons that you learned that obviously are helping you be where you're at today and have the leadership of a successful program?
I will say, you know, I think being in a small school where you had to do everything is something that's helped me a great deal, because it's what it's allowed me to do is put my hands on a lot of different things. I was very blessed as a young coach to be able to coach multiple positions. And so I routinely was made to feel uncomfortable in the transition, and you have to try and become an expert in that area quickly. And so, you know, I really felt like that helped. It helped me to be adaptable. You know, you touched on something that I think is so important, and that's communication and player relations. I think that those things are, you know, when you learn how to deal with people, you know, that becomes the lifeblood of what we do day in and day out. And it's understanding that those relationships that you form with players have to go way beyond just the football field. You know, they have to go, you know, they in essence become an extension of your family. And so when you treat people like that, when you treat them as one of your own, I think you tend to get great results from them and watch them grow and develop.
Absolutely. And part of, you know, those relationships, they have to build into something bigger. They have to build into a culture. And ultimately, cultures is what drives, you know, what happens on those diagrams. You know, those X's and O's represent people, and they're not static. It's a very dynamic game. So much goes into making things on the field happen right, but a big part of it happens through developing that culture. You know, for you, what are some of the key things you look at in, you know, bringing all these relationships together, bringing everybody together into a culture that is moving in one direction?
You know, for us, one of the things that we look for is highly intrinsically motivated people. And, you know, when we watch players, and it doesn't matter if we're hiring a graduate assistant or a full-time coach, or we're recruiting and looking at, you know, future players here at Northwest, the thing that we're looking for is people that want to be elite. And when we turn on a tape on a high school kid, he's going to be a good football player. What I want to do when I get to the high school, and I just got back from one today, is I want to go talk to the lady in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. I want to visit with the science teacher. I want to visit with the guidance counselor. I want to find out, you know, what other areas, you know, what is this kid all about? Is it just on the football field? Does he, you know, does he need that crowd? Does he need that external motivator? Or is it really from within? Because I think when you find people, you know, to join your organization that just have an inner desire to be excellent in everything that you do, it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so what the toughest thing at Northwest is when you bring a young kid in, he's not going to have success right away. And so it's that piece that pushes him through. It's that piece that allows him to persevere, to change his body, to prepare to get ready to play college football, because it's a much different level. And so, you know, when you get kids that are good students and you get kids that are involved in the community, then what you land is a well-rounded person who's going to help make Northwest Missouri State a better place.
Absolutely, Coach. In creating and helping develop that well-rounded person, part of it is the NCAA guidelines about contact hours and how much time we can spend. But at the end of the day, we got to be really efficient with our time so that they can go out and be that person who's going to develop in all phases of their life. What things are you guys doing to efficiently use your time as teachers in the classroom setting before you hit the field?
We meet every day. We do watch tape. But, you know, as any good coach knows, that's just one way to teach. And so it's a blend of film study. It's a blend of walkthrough. It's some fundy time. And we incorporate all different phases. You know, we have the electronic playbooks and those types of things. But, you know, more often than not, we find that our kids learn a lot better and retention is better if we do more and watch and talk less. And so, you know, the more we can get them out onto the field and do walkthrough periods and try and get them moving around, the more engaged and focused they remain.
Absolutely, Coach. And as you take and develop your part as coaches, you know, the game planning part that goes into it, looking at the defensive side first, and I certainly want to talk about some of what you guys did to block punts and kicks this year, but what kind of things do you do to be efficient as coaches to break down your opponent? Because you could look at this a million different ways. You can become almost a prisoner to film. So how do you stay efficient and do everything you need to do as coaches in developing this, as well as obviously getting out there and being able to work with the players too?
Right. One of the things that we've tried to do, you know, and it's funny, I guess the older you get, the more simple I get. We've really tried to simplify our defense with the up-tempo stuff, with the no-huddle attack, with everybody trying to push the pace and be in all these different formations. In a lot of ways, they've taken the game, you know, away from the sideline a little bit, because you've got to be able to be dynamic in your ability to change and adapt based on how formations are going to change. So, you know, the thing that we looked at about 4 or 5 years ago was to really kind of simplify what we were doing. I mean, for several years at Northwest, I mean, if you were to come and look at our playbook, there wasn't a blitz we didn't like. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, what happens, you know, a lot of times is you can get out leveraged and out flanked. And so what we started to do is we started to simplify. We started to, you know, teach a lot of great technique, a lot of great fundamentals, play with leverage, and then allow our kids to check things on the field based on personnel formation and who was lined up where. And almost, I call it giving the keys to the Cadillac, or giving you the keys to the Cadillac is let our kids call the game on the field. So we spend the week teaching them what we want and how we want it, predicated on what we see. And then on Saturday, it's their job to go out and execute it. So a lot of what we do is a base call lined up with a check in the back end. The games up on the front are predicated on certain formations and sets. And then we just kind of move forward with that. And so what it allows our players to do, it allows us to delve much further into what the offense is actually doing. Because with the fast tempo, with the sets, with the, you know, the movements and trying to manipulate formations and things, offenses are definitely giving us tendencies. And we feel like being able to spend more time looking and seeing what they're doing pre-snap allows us to have a pretty good idea what's going to happen before the snap of the ball.
Coach, and you hit on something I think is really important right there, and maybe something that has escaped the game a little bit as we get all cut up in all these different things we can do with the X's and O's. And on the defensive side, it's all the pressures and blitzes. On the offensive side, it's the RPOs and the free access and all those different things, is the fundamentals. At the heart of this game, it really comes down to, you know, this is blocking, defeating blocks, tackling and evading tackles. And you have to be really good at that. I know you mentioned spending time on it. You mentioned fundies as part of what you guys do in teaching this too. How big is that for you, and how important is it that your coaching staff are great teachers of fundamentals?
You've got to be a great teacher of fundamentals. And it's really the hallmark of why we've changed defensively. And we've led the nation each of the last 4 years in total defense. And so it hasn't been just a run of a class. It's been more of a culture of understanding. And so what we're trying to do here is we're trying to get our kids to figure out that once we get you to the point where you understand basic techniques and fundamentals, then you're going to play and execute at a high level regardless of what I call. And so the tough thing is when you get into a really heavy pressure package, you're relying on the pressure rather than on the fundamentals to create plays for you. And so, you know, we're adamant about teaching our kids how to play base defense and how to do it really well. And we feel like if we can do that, then we create ourselves an opportunity to be successful. Furthermore, I think the other piece in that is, you know, you get into that high risk, high reward a little bit sometimes with the blitzes. And if you don't give up explosive plays as a defense, you're going to have an opportunity to win a heck of a lot of football games. And so, you know, that's kind of really been our mantra. You know, attack the quarterback with a four-man rush, and predominantly do that. We run some pass rush games and stuff, play really sound coverage in the back end, whether it's man or it's zone, try and do a lot of things to disguise. And that's where our manipulation and understanding what we're seeing kind of helps us.
I know, Coach, a lot of people pay attention as they're putting together their playbook, the amount of techniques that each position needs to master. And part of being simple is making sure that, you know, your guys really only have to be good at a few things. Maybe there's some advanced stuff they get into, like pass rush moves, which they kind of could add their signature to. But going back to playing that base defense and putting together a defensive system, and I think this is for our coaches out there, how important is it that you're looking at what are all the fundamentals and techniques that each player has to master?
And I think that that's vitally important because, you know, like, for example, I mean, we don't slant a bunch as a front here at Northwest, never have, because we feel like if our guys can get our hands on people, we can play with great lockout and separation, that we're going to be able to condense and squeeze gaps and play where we want to play. You know, in contrast, when we used to slant a lot, we'd get pushed by things. And it's a microcosm of what you're talking about. If you take the All-American blitz, the two backers off the edge, the defensive end with a long stick into the A gap and a 3-under-3 deep, you know, type of zone pressure concept. Okay, so you're doing that to 21 personnel. Great. Now you're going to have to do it to 11. Well, what's the adjustment? Now you're going to do it to 10. What's the adjustment off of that? What's the adjustment to a double tight look? So how much time am I spending on that one blitz to get our guys to understand what it is that we want to do? Whereas if I can play just great base technique and we can do it with our people rather than on a scheme. And I think that's key, is it's not scheme that wins and loses football games. It's people. It's having an understanding. It's having an awareness. It's playing with great fundamentals that wins football games week in and week out. There may be a call or two or three where you dial something up and you catch somebody where they weren't expecting something. But by and large, your scheme as a defensive coach, you know, just what I'm going to call on the sideline isn't going to win us and lose us a football game. It's going to be the kids that are out there executing it. And they're only as good as what you can teach them during the week. And again, it goes back to the same thing we talked about a minute ago. The more developed and refined you can make what they do snap in and snap out, the better you're going to be. And in addition, the faster your kids are going to play, because if there's any question about what's going to happen pre-snap or what they're supposed to do pre-snap, you get that paralysis that happens, that deer in the headlights, where they don't react right away. I want my kids to play the moment the ball snapped. I want them to be decisive, and I want them to be fast.
I know, Coach, in continuing on with this conversation on fundamentals and techniques, certainly the spotlight right now, especially if you know, you read what's being pushed in the media, the player safety issue, it has become something big. And obviously, I think the way you get better, the way the game gets safer, is through superior technique. You know, over the last few years here, how has, you know, technique in terms of all, not just looking at what's the most effective, but what's safer for players, what's better for players? I mean, you and I both know that at any level, however far you get football in someday, and you're left with the rest of your life. And I know you guys care deeply about your players. So how much has the player safety issue been pushed to the forefront for you?
Oh, I think it has in all levels. You know, I just look at the changes that have happened, you know, in my career, you know, as far as regards to concussion protocols and how things are monitored. And, you know, just shoot, even in the last 365 days, you know, the you know, concussion protocol. And if a kid gets a concussion on Saturday and has any type of symptom on Sunday, they're out for the following week. And so that's obviously helped things tremendously. Just the understanding and the awareness of how serious that is, because if you go back to when we played, it was different, you know, and just because there wasn't that same level of understanding. But to your point, I think what you try and do as a coach is if you're teaching good technique and fundamentals, you're putting kids in as reasonably safe a condition as you possibly can. And we're constantly, as a defensive staff, teaching, you know, proper tackling technique, proper way to fit your head into things, proper way, you know, how you want, what you want your pads to look like, what you want your body to look like, what the collision needs to be. And so we teach and preach every single day.
Have those drills changed for you over the last couple of years in some of the things you're implementing?
Honestly, no. It's ironically, you know, and maybe we just taught good tackling fundamentals all along, but it really hasn't changed much for us. Some of your listeners might find it interesting if I have a kid, and I'm the D-line coach. I'm still the defensive line coach here at Northwest Missouri State, as well as the defensive coordinator. But you tend to, you know, so to give you an illustration, you know, I'm always looking at my kids' helmets.
Right.
You know, so if I'm seeing a guy that's got a lot of marks on the top of his helmet, I'm routinely in Fundy period going to take his helmet away from him. And so there's nothing to make a kid become aware of his face and his head quicker than not having a football helmet on. And particularly in a position where I can control the speed and the tempo of it, you start to, you know, hone in and teach those techniques and those habits without having that security blanket, so to speak, of having that helmet on. And yes. And so we get a lot of good teaching out of that.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point to emphasize, Coach. It used to be, you know, the time I played, I'm sure probably when you did too, that battle-scarred helmet was like a sign of toughness, where today,
right,
as we understand more about the game and player safety and all those things, a clean helmet is the sign of a superior player.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's just like in practice, you know, you talk about guys that are playing full speed and doing this and that. And when you're young, you think that means, you know, diving for this, diving for that. Anymore. If, you know, on our field, if anybody's, I'm saying the bad athletes are the ones that are on the ground.
Yes.
You know, if we're practicing the way we should practice, I shouldn't see anybody on the ground at any time, you know, just because of the injury issues.
You know, at the Division III level where I coached at Baldwin Wallace, it was the same thing with us. The hardest group for us was that freshman group, getting them to understand it's different. we stay off the ground, and it really takes coaches almost going berserk, like, get off the ground, you know, yelling at those guys and getting them to understand that, you know, you got to play on your feet. It's not about launching your body. And you know, I think as we look at what do we do with youth football, I think that becomes a serious issue. I've heard of people going out, you know, right now and doing padded flag and getting players to understand how to carry their pads and to stay away from, you know, the tendency to launch your body and think that you're super protected. And I think those initiatives are great right now. And obviously this is such a great game. We want to make sure it's available to our youth, to everybody all the way through, not just because it's exciting and fun to watch, but because of all the lessons and all the things we do to teach as coaches along the way and just develop great human beings. So we have to be super conscious of those things right now.
No doubt. I agree with everything you just said. And I'll share something with your listeners that I got, and this is by no means my idea. I was at the University of Iowa's football clinic. We were on spring break, and I happened to be over there visiting with their staff a couple days, and they held their high school clinic. And I listened to a guy speak. His name is Marv Cook, played at Iowa, was an All-American there. He's at Iowa City Regina High School. He's a head football coach there. And he talked about a concept they thought was really interesting. What they do at Regina is their fifth and sixth grade boys do play with pads, okay? But it's done with flags on, so there is no live tackling. So they spend 2 years teaching fundamentals, okay? And so when they play in a game situation, they're blocking, you know, they're doing all the other things. They're getting used to their pads, the weight of the helmet, the this, the that. But they're finishing everything with two hands forming through and grabbing flags.
Yep.
And so by the time those kids get to junior high, they've had 2 years of individual instruction every single day in practice and in controlled situations where they learn how to tackle. So by the time they get to junior high, they're functioning at a really high level. And I don't think there's any doubt why, you know, and I don't know how familiar you are with Iowa football, but Iowa City Regina, I think, if I'm not mistaken, ran off 6 straight years of state championships.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's been a lot of carry through in their program. And I just thought it was a great concept, you know, because we put pads on kids and they're uncomfortable and they're strange. And then all of a sudden we're telling them to tackle. And you know, I think sometimes if you can teach some of the other concepts early in controlled tackling situations where coaches have their hands on it more, you add a safety component and you actually teach, because it's not something that's just natural to us.
No, it really isn't. And I don't think we've viewed it as that for quite a long time. But, you know, I say all the time, it is as technical to learn as hitting a curveball in baseball, right? I mean, it's, you know, you have to pay attention to the details to do it right. Otherwise, you're a danger to yourself out there. You're a danger to the other players on the field. That the way really to get safety in this game is through superior technique. And obviously, that's our responsibility as coaches. It's not just, hey, what cool scheme can we run today? We got to really understand deeply how the techniques go into that and how our players are going to execute those correctly, as you and I have been talking about.
Absolutely.
Coach, as we delve into things a little bit deeper on your defense, the one thing I wanted to finish up on that side of the ball is third downs. And you guys led the nation in third down percentage. So critical in the game to get off the field, get your offense back on the field and let them score. Talk to me a little bit about what goes into both the planning of third down and how you guys work that in practice.
One of the things that we really try and, if there's a down where we're going to be more multiple, it is third down, because we feel like we get you into a predictable scenario. We kind of know what you're going to be in. We kind of know what you're going to do depending upon what the distance is. And so that allows me more flexibility as the coordinator to be more multiple with what we want to try and bring. It really starts in the week is for us in looking at the protections to determine where do we feel like we can exploit and how do we feel like we can attack. We're looking at that both in, you know, schematically what they're doing as well as where we can potentially win individual matchups and trying to get one of our better players on one of their weaker blockers is something that we do. In addition, defensively, what we try to look at is when we're matching our coverage with things, it's looking not at formation so much as that it is as threat. Who is number one and who is number two on our side? So the way that we do our defense from the back end is we're playing with a corner, a safety, and a backer who are basically three for two. And depending upon what the threat is there, we'll determine whether we're using all three and how we're using all three or whether we're just using two and manning it up. And so depending upon who that guy is allows us some flexibility to either add a backer into the pressure or potentially to drop him out and utilize him a little bit more in the coverage. The thing is with the spread systems that we found is that the ball is trying to come off very fast. And so what we're going to try and do is we're trying to disrupt things at the line of scrimmage. We're trying to mess with timing and we're trying to take away the initial read. One of the things that I'm noticing in college football right now is that, you know, compared to what it was 15 to 20 years ago, offensive systems as far as reads are concerned are really more watered down. The progressions, the old West Coast style Bill Walsh system really isn't there. It's more get the ball, gather, throw the ball. And so if we can create hesitation on that end, that's where our pressure is able to, you know, move to the front and create problems for their offense. And so we work together, create the outcome.
And coach, as you bring that onto the practice field, what does a typical week look like for you and the time that you're spending on those different third down situations?
We do it two different times. We have on Wednesdays, we have what we call a pup period, which is a pass under pressure. So that's where we're taking a look at the various blitzes that we like, or we think we like at that time, the different pressures and how they match up with our coverages. I'm often looking to try and select specific routes that I feel like we're going to see and how it matches up. And then we also down and distance our practice on Wednesdays and Thursdays in addition. And that helps us, you know, put it into more of a team segment where we can actually see, you know, some of it's pressure, some of it's not, some of it's show. And so we're trying to teach guys kind of what we're looking for. And so that by the time we get to Saturday, that our pressures and our shows look one and the same. And that's where your film study helps, you know, as far as your evaluations on what it looks like. Because, you know, the kids sometimes don't understand what the picture looks like on the field as well as they do on the tape. So when we can go back into the film room and say, okay, so, you know, look at how our back end looks right now. We look like we're inverted. We're blitzing here. Here we've got two safeties standing high and backers are standing, you know, in normal positions. There's no pressure here. Let's see how we adjust. So let's go back to our pressure look. What did it look like here? Well, the backer scissored. Okay, yeah. So now when we're not pressuring, we've got to give that same scissored look. We've got to give that same pressed look. We've got to give the illusion that we're going to come when we're not. So, you know, it's just all those little details that we try and pull back together.
Appreciate you sharing that. And obviously, there's a lot to learn from you guys and how you do it, leading the nation now for several years. But I want to delve into the third phase of the game, the special teams. And, you know, in my time in coaching, I think the biggest thing I've seen that special teams are going to be excellent if the head coach really makes a commitment to it. And it's not that talk about it. It's actually making sure everything happens in preparation, in the film room, on the field, so that you're able to go out and have excellent special teams. And you guys led the nation in block kicks. You're number two in block punts. So talk to us a little bit about how you make that happen and the commitment to special teams at Northwest Missouri State.
It really, in my opinion, begins with your personnel. I think a lot of people have the mentality where they talk about that it's a third of the game and how important it is. We actually illustrate that in, you know, first of all, who plays on the special teams. For us, it's a lot of our starters. It's a lot of our best players. And then the attention to it is what our staff brings. So, you know, a lot of places where I go and watch, you know, there's a couple coaches that are teaching facets of it. We actually have every full-time coach on our staff. So if we're on punt team, for example, I'm coaching the long snapper and the punter. I have a guy that's in charge of the three guys in the shield. I have a guy that's in charge of the two arrows. I have a guy who's in charge of the guard and tackle on the right side and the guard and the tackle on the left side. And they're coaching it, and it's our full-time guys. And so I think sometimes where it's that perception, it's kids think it's important because they see how hard we're coaching it. They see how much we're paying attention to detail. I think sometimes what can happen is you have a coach that's in charge of the punt team, for example, and other guys are involved in it, but yet they're kind of standing back and they're not really engaged. I mean, if you were to come to our practice, you'll see immediately that our coaches are coaching that position, and they're in it just like it was inside run or just like it was, you know, Pascal. It's no different. And so I think that kind of sets the tempo and the message for, you know, how we feel about special teams here at Northwest Missouri State.
Coach, I think part of this, you know, having been at the college level and being involved, I was the offensive coordinator. I was also in charge of our kick return. And so for me, it was always important that I wanted guys engaged in what they're doing on special teams too. And when I first started, I noticed that there were a lot of groups who took that period off. So, you know, from the offensive side, I said, hey, O-line, you're not in this. Go work on fundamentals. Receivers, get over here. You're going to do this. What does the rest of the field look like with those guys who maybe aren't involved at that particular time?
Same as what you're doing is that, you know, like, for example, if the O-line's not involved, you know, and we've kind of modified and had to tweak this because we had always let our offensive line coach go and go work with those guys. But, you know, I was so adamant that we were going, all of our full, our kids were going to see how important it was because all of our full-time guys were going to be there. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is we let a couple of our senior leaders go down and teach some fundamentals. Or if we have a student coach who's not engaged at that particular time, he may go down. But we also videotape it so that the kids know there's an eye in the sky and there needs to be work getting done at that same time. And so that's helped us, you know, not only to have a great special teams period, but also allowed us to get work done in other areas where guys, you know, weren't actively involved in what we were doing.
Yeah, I think that's so critical, and I like that idea. I've used it before, too, and I think coaches at the high school level can certainly benefit from, like you said, taking that group of senior leaders or leaders in those position groups and go give them a work on your own period. Sometimes, you know, I would give guys a little individualized period. You guys go over here, get a partner or two, you know, either work on a pass rush move, work on your combos, whatever it might be. This is the time for you guys to get better, specifically on the things you feel like I need to work on a little bit. And, you know, I think when you give that ownership to any players, you give them that ability to kind of create their own practice or take a drill where they need it to go, it creates a little bit more ownership. They're not going through the motions.
Absolutely. I think anytime you can do that with kids, that's good. And then also to, you know, if there's not a coach available at that particular time, creating that ownership, creating that, you know, that leadership piece that you're looking for anyway, you know, having peers, you know, help teach and develop is another important facet to developing a great football program. So it's important. You know, I think that the thing that's allowed us as far as the kick blocks are concerned is we truly consider it another play of defense. Mm-hmm. There are very few ways where as a defensive player you can score. And so, you know, we've really kind of tried to push that upon our players, you know, and so most of our players on, well, obviously on field goal block are defensive kids, but as well as our punt block team. And we try and make it a snap of defensive football. And if you can have some success and show them how they can change momentum and change a game doing it, boy, then the buy-in factor becomes fantastic.
Coach, I love spending time with you here on the podcast. And to wrap things up, man, you guys are doing so many things well at Northwest Missouri State. But you know, looking at all the things you do from the time you start, you know, in your first off-season meeting all the way through your to your last game, what would be the one thing that you would point to that you say gives your team the winning edge?
That's a great question. I guess if I had to pick one thing, it would be the character of our kids. It would be their willingness to work hard 365 days a year. Our kids, you know, we have great kids here, and their football is important to them, and they want to be the best. And so they're willing to put in the time and the effort it takes to play at that high level. They're willing to do things others aren't in order to be successful. And I think that's really been key to our success here at Northwest Missouri State.
Coach, again, thanks for taking the time. If our listeners want to connect with you, what's the best way they could do that?
Shoot, they can jump on the internet and find my email address at our website at nwmissouri.edu, and feel free to contact me anytime. If anybody would like to come over for spring practice, you know, we have an open door policy as far as staffs are concerned. If they just let us know when they're going to be in town, and we're willing to talk about and show any and everything that we're doing, both offensively and defensively, and we begin that the first week in March.
Coach, I appreciate your time. Appreciate all you're doing to be a leader in this game as well.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.